Scripture and Shraddhaya with faith, Amidah endowed. Translation: such persons are ever bereft of devotional service due to being too attached to sense gratification, and therefore, although they perform various kinds of sacrifices and take great vows to satisfy the demigods and forefathers, they are not interested in Krishna consciousness, devotional service. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In Bhagavad Gita 7.20, it is said that persons who worship demigods have lost their intelligence, kama-istaistha-vritta-jnana. They are much attracted to sense gratification, and therefore they worship the demigods. It is, of course, recommended in the Vedic scriptures that if one wants money, health, or education, then he should worship the various demigods. A materialistic person has manifold demands, and thus there are manifold demigods to satisfy his senses. The Grihamedis, who want to continue a prosperous materialistic way of life, generally worship the demigods or the forefathers by offering pinda or respectful oblations. Such persons are bereft of Krishna consciousness and are not interested in devotional service to the Lord. This kind of so-called pious and religious man is the result of impersonalism. The impersonalists maintain that the Supreme Absolute Truth has no form and that one can imagine any form he likes for his benefit and worship in that way. Therefore, the Grihamedis, or materialistic men, say that they can worship any form of a demigod as worship of the Supreme Lord. Especially amongst the Hindus, those who are meat-eaters prefer to worship goddess Kali because it is prescribed that one can sacrifice a goat before that goddess. They maintain that whether one worships the goddess Kali or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, or any demigod, the destination is the same. This is first-class rascaldom, and such people are misled, but they prefer this philosophy. Bhagavad Gita does not accept such rascaldom, and it is clearly stated that such methods are meant for persons who have lost their intelligence. The same judgment is confirmed here, and the word kama mudha, meaning one who has lost his sense or is infatuated by the lust of attraction for sense gratification, is used. Kama mudhas are bereft of Krishna consciousness and devotional service and are infatuated by a strong desire for sense gratification. The worshippers of demigods are condemned both in Bhagavad Gita and in Srimad Bhagavatam. Sachapi bhagavad dharmat kamam naparan mukraha yajite katubir devam pitrims cha shradayan vitaha. So one might question, why then, if worship of the demigods is condemned, both in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, is it allowed in the Vedic culture? Vedic culture certainly includes demigod worship. We can't deny that. So what is the reason for this? The reason is that the Vedas are providing for a whole society. And the Vedas provide not only spiritual knowledge, the highest spiritual knowledge, but they also provide material knowledge and material direction for society. Therefore, everything that's Vedic is not necessarily transcendental. Although, because it's part of a system for gradual development up to the transcendental platform, it could be said to be transcendental in that sense. So we use the word Vedic sometimes interplaceably with Krishna culture, Vedic culture, transcendental culture, because culture means that it's improving towards the point. And if one knows the goal of the Vedas, Vedaisya Sarvar Aham Eva Vedya, that Krishna is the goal of all Vedic knowledge. That is the point. The point is not to worship the demigods. The point is not to get good health in the material world. The point is not to acquire kingdoms. Or the point is not even to merge into the Brahman. This is not the real goal. However, because not everyone is ready for accepting that Krishna is the ultimate goal, there are purusharthas, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, especially four. People are advised to perform dharma. And dharma, taken in terms of the Vedic literatures, Vedic injunctions. There may be dharma according to the Karmakandya section, Jnanakanda, or Upasanakanda, three different divisions of dharma. And then there's other divisions of dharma also. There's Brahmacharya dharma, Grihastha dharma. So, four social orders, four spiritual orders, and each one has their dharma. And so combined, there are all kinds of religious duties and rituals, performances, that everyone is advised to follow. However, there's also three modes of material nature. So those who are influenced by the mode of ignorance, they're not neglected. They're also given some dharma, even though it may not be transcendental dharma, just like in the purport Srila Prabhupada's pointing out about even amongst the Hindus, those who are mediators prefer to worship goddess Kali so they can offer a goat, sacrifice a goat. Now we may be shocked. How could a Hindu be a mediator? Sounds like a contradiction, but no, it's not. Even according to Vedic culture, it's allowed. One time, Srila Prabhupada was having a discussion with a learned doctor in Mumbai, and that person was proudly saying that he didn't accept mediating under any circumstances. He felt it was wrong under all circumstances. So Srila Prabhupada said, "Oh, that is Buddhism." And he was shocked because he considered himself at least a very pious Hindu and perhaps even a Vaishnava. He was kind of thinking that he was a Vaishnava. And Prabhupada said, "Oh, that's Buddhism." So he was shocked. How is it Buddhism? Meat eating is bad under any circumstances. And Prabhupada stuck on the point, no, it's Buddhism because Buddha, he rejected the Vedas just to make the point that he didn't accept meat eating under any circumstances. Because in the Vedas, there is this injunction that one can worship God as Kali and offer a goat. But he said, "All right, if that's the case, then I don't accept the Vedas." And he left Vedic culture, Nastik. He became an atheist just to establish his principle of Ahimsa Paramo Dharma. Nonviolence is the highest principle. But it's not the highest principle, but he established it that way for a particular purpose. So we have to accept that there may be a time and circumstance where this injunction allowing people to eat goats is good. It's actually good for them, depending on the disease. If one is very much in the mode of ignorance, then it's better for him to do that. Why? Because, like, before he sacrifices the goat, he has to whisper in the ear, "Mamsa, kaviti mamsa. I'm eating you, and now in the next life you'll have a chance to eat me." So he gets some instruction there. Even though he's so much in the mode of ignorance that he wants to eat a goat, and some of you know that is also only allowed once in a month on the dark moon night, and he has to take the goat outside the village. So it's already dark. There's no moon. It's a dark moon night, and it has to be a black goat. and he's going outside at midnight. So who wants to go for a, you know, goat feast at midnight on a dark moon night outside the village? The whole thing is practically absurd. But the idea is just to make him realize how absurd this habit of eating flesh is. And on top of all that, even if you can somehow or other rationalize it, well, it's not so bad, it's midnight, all right, it's midnight, but I'll get some nice flesh. Then, the crowning blow is you have to whisper in the ear of the goat. That's already somewhat humiliating because you're about to slaughter the goat, and now you're whispering in the ear. So it indicates that the goat is also a person, and that can, you know, you're speaking to the goat that you're going to eat in just a minute. So the whole thing. And on top of that, what you're speaking is that, don't worry, I'm eating you now, but you'll have a chance to eat me in the next life. So if someone's a little thoughtful, he can put the whole thing together and say, this is not a very ideal situation to be in. So we see, even the Vedas that are designed for those in the mode of ignorance are so helpful. Because what does it mean? Mamsa, kaditi mamsa, means I'm eating you, I'm whispering in your ear, that means you're a person. And I'm also a person. And it's also including that next lifetime, we're both going to be living again. So the whole Bhagavad Gita is confirmed that life doesn't end. So we can see, even those who are in Vedic culture, in the lowest mode, in the darkest region, still they're more advanced than the most brilliant, enlightened scholars and scientists of the Western world, who don't know anything about the soul, who don't know anything about the next life, don't even know that they're going to be living again. You see the point? That's why Vedic culture is so glorious. That even in the lowest level of instruction is higher than the highest MIT graduates or Oxford graduates who don't have any knowledge. Prabhupada used to use the example of Professor Kotovsky. He really used that example a lot. Prabhupada was invited to come and meet with this professor in Moscow. And so somehow or other they were discussing, and Prabhupada was preaching to him, and the professor at one point he didn't accept that there was a soul that survived past the body. He said, no, Swamiji, when the body dies, then the soul dies. Everything's finished. There's no more. So this is the same philosophy as Charvak Muni, the great atheist, who said that once the body is burnt to ashes, then who's coming back? His philosophy was beg, borrow, or steal. But get ghee, because with ghee you can enjoy your senses. Ghee is very nice, you can make many nice preparations. So his idea was you have to get ghee for enjoyment. And also ghee is used for sacrifices to the forefathers, as described here. The pindat, you need ghee for all these havans and all these agnihotras. So the point is, either use ghee for cooking and enjoying your tongue, and or use ghee for going to the heavenly planets after this lifetime. But one way or another, you have to enjoy your senses. That was his idea. And his conclusion was, beg, borrow, or steal. It doesn't matter how you get it. So someone might say, well, if you're stealing and borrowing, then what? And if you don't pay it back, then you have some karma. He said, what is this karma? Karma. When the body is burned into ashes, everything is finished. That was his philosophy. And that's the same philosophy that's prominent now. People don't want to hear about the next life that you might have, just like I was recently speaking amongst some leaders of a religious, and they even accept reincarnation, but they don't like the idea that you can go down. They like the idea that you always remain a nice human and a nice family, nice situation. They don't like the idea. Of course, I had to disappoint them by, it was not, I couldn't just make a compromise. I had to disappoint them by telling them that, no, it's very possible that if you have the consciousness of an animal, then you become an animal, or even a plant. Prabhupada used to use that example that the nudis, because he was preaching, and sometimes he even went to nudist camps for preaching. Maybe you didn't know that, but when Prabhupada was preaching in San Francisco in the 67, he was invited to one Morning Star Ranch. Well, those who know what Morning Star Ranch was, it was a bunch of hippies going around nude. Some of them even lived in trees. So Prabhupada went there to preach. And he was preaching to them, and they were all walking around nude. Amazing. And about 10 of them became devotees, which is even more remarkable. So Prabhupada knew quite well about the tendencies of the hippies to go where they liked all. Prabhupada said, yes, there are many trees who stand up for thousands of years naked. So those who want to go around naked, they get their next life as trees. And he quoted, it wasn't just his theory, he quoted the Srimad Bhagavatam where the sons of Kuvera had to stand up as trees because they wanted to go naked. So Prabhupada, everything he said, although it may have been just kind of interesting and amusing, but it was also based on Vedic evidence. So Vedic culture is wonderful even when it's bringing people out of the mode of ignorance, because included in the Dharma or their instructions are so many Vedic important spiritual principles, namely the soul is eternal and one is responsible for his own activities, the karma, law of karma is in effect, that the soul can go down and the soul can go up, that the animal soul goes up and the human soul, when he's degraded, he goes down. All these things are included in that. Even the Kali worshippers. So one time someone asked Prabhupada, which is better, to be a Christian or to be in Vedic culture and worship demigods? And Prabhupada said, it's better to be in Vedic culture. Because if one is connected with Vedic culture, there's so much, it's so rich, there's so many opportunities for advancement. For example, even those who worship demigods. Of course, it's not recommended, as Srila, that's the main point here, it's not recommended. But even those who do it, impelled by kama istashtara hritta jnana, by lusty desires, still they get the benefit because they have to offer respect to Vishnu. Yajnavai Vishnu. At every sacrifice, Vishnu has to be worshipped. And it's even explained that they ask Vishnu to kindly allow the sacrifice to be successful. So if Vishnu is allowing the worship to go on of the demigods, then it means that Vishnu is above the demigods. He's the ultimate supreme controller. And that is also there. And these demigods are all devotees of Vishnu also. Who are they worshipping? They're worshipping Brahma or Shiva or Kali. But Kali is another name for the wife of Lord Shiva, or the other name for Mahamaya, or Durga. They're all the same person. But she's a great devotee of the Lord, of Lord Krishna. She's not just an ordinary person. And Lord Shiva, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu, he's the greatest of the Vaishnavas. And Brahma, he's a great devotee. So even worshipping the demigods, they're associating with pure devotees. Or at least great devotees, we can say. Maybe not pure devotees. But they're associating with devotees of the Lord who are very exalted. So they get benefit like that. And they're getting faith in the Vedas. So by studying, by worshipping some demigods, what happens? Let's say one wants to get a beautiful wife, so he worships goddess Uma. That's the wife of Lord Shiva, another name. One can do that. It's recommended in the Vedas. You can, because she's very beautiful and she has a lot of power. She's in charge of material energy, so she can arrange for you to have a nice, beautiful wife. So someone impelled by this desire worships Uma very carefully, and then he gets a beautiful wife. This is great, this Vedic culture. Very nice. And if he wants money, he can worship the Vasus, and if he wants good health, he worships the sun, and if he wants material knowledge, he worships Sarasvati, the goddess. So in this way, his confidence increases. He sees this is working. But then, dharma, artha, for economic development, and kama, sense gratification. But then, after sense gratification, one is still not satisfied. Even though he may get beautiful wife, beautiful husband, great wealth, he's still not satisfied, because we know from Bhagavad Gita that no matter how much one tries to enjoy material things, it doesn't satisfy the soul. So then he wants moksha. He gets frustrated that he can't be happy this way. We see that even people who have lots of money, they're just as frustrated as everyone else, and sometimes more, because they think, well, I've done everything I'm supposed to do. I have all the money, and still I'm frustrated. Whereas someone who's poor, he may not expect to get so much. So then they want moksha, because they see that although they're trying to enjoy their senses, the body's growing old, it's deteriorating, everything's falling apart, death is waiting for them. So they start getting nervous, and they think, well, maybe I should get moksha, liberation from all this. They hear about karma, they're going to have to suffer in their next life, so then they want to get free from their sinful reactions. However, their attempts are impelled by impersonalism, as Srila Prabhupada points out in the purport, that why do they perform all these sacrifices to the demigods? Because of the result of impersonalism. They're ignoring the personality of Godhead. And so they make a compromise that yatamatatatapata, whatever path that you follow, it all comes to the same goal. And Prabhupada describes here that this is really rascaldom. First-class rascaldom, not just ordinary rascaldom, but first-class rascaldom. That when someone says you can worship Kali, and he's especially, not directly, because Prabhupada said that we shouldn't, even when there's some culprit or some rascal who's giving some horrible philosophy, he said better not to mention him directly. Don't attack him personally. Because he gave the example that if you kill a skunk, then your hand smells bad. So even if you attack someone, one of these rascals, by name, then there'll be some bad smell attached to you. You get entangled, you make enemies because their followers become upset. But he said better you find out what their philosophy is and you defeat that. So I won't mention any particular names. But there was one such rascal who promoted this philosophy that if you worship Kali, it's the same as if you worship Krishna. You can chant Kali. Doesn't matter what you do. You can eat meat. And he had his sannyasis also eating meat, delicious eggs. Still, to this day, they do. So Prabhupada said this philosophy destroyed Bengal, actually. It ruined Bengal, the Vedic culture. So there are so many philosophies that people come up with which are not Vedic. People who don't understand the Vedas or understand just a little bit or take parts out, they present themselves as gurus or sadhus. And because the people in general are not very intelligent, manda sumanda matayo, manda bhagya, they're not intelligent. They can't discriminate very well. They can't tell what is the actual purport of the Vedas. So that's why it says, manda, they're slow. They don't even care about spiritual life. But even if they do make some effort, well, let me try to get a guru, then they get cheated. They get some rascal guru who gives them all nonsense advice. Not in the Vedas. So it's a bad age. Sometimes we wonder why so many people are attracted by these bogus organizations. It's because the cheaters and the cheated Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say, this is the age for that. There's so many people who want to be cheated. What does it mean that they want to be cheated? It means they want something valuable, but they don't want to pay the price. Like if you go into a dime store, you know, a dime store, just a few, very cheap store. So, and you look around and you find some jewels there. And you say, how much is this one? And they say, that one's $1.95. Say, that's too much. You know, I'd like to get it. You try to make some deal. All right, I'll pay $1.50. So you pay $1.50 for a jewel, for a diamond. Now, is it going to be a real diamond? Anyone with a little intelligence knows they can't be selling real diamonds. And look at the store, everything's very cheap here. So he wants something real, but he doesn't want to, he wants to have the idea of a beautiful diamond, but he pays only $1.50. No. So he's a cheater, or he's cheated. And the cheater, sure, he'll say whatever to sell his product to get his money. There's a story about the cheaters and the cheated. There were some ladies of ill repute, prostitutes, but they got together and they decided it would be a good idea to have children by sadhus, because then they knew something about Vedic culture. They know they're sadhus, they're saintly persons. If I get a child by a saintly person, it'll be very nice. It's about my only, how else will I get auspiciousness? So they went there, down to the river, because generally sadhus, they remain by the sacred rivers and they do their, you know, the holy rivers and they chant. So they went there to try to seduce the sadhus. But then some men of ill repute, some low-class men, they thought, well, look, these women are going there trying to seduce the sadhus, so let's dress up like sadhus. And then the women will come. And so they dressed up like sadhus and they went down there. And so in this way, the cheaters and the cheated. People dress up like sadhus nowadays because people want to be cheated. They want to be told that you can do anything you like and you're also spiritual and you're God also at the same time. Even more attractive. Not only can you do anything you like and still be spiritual, but you can even be God and do it. That's everything you like. And there's no rules, because you're God. How can anyone impose some rules on you? What's right and wrong? If I'm God, what's right or wrong for me? Whatever I do is perfect. They know that much. So, this is Kali Yuga. It's a bad age. It's not easy for anyone to get out of this material entanglement. This chapter is entitled Entanglement and Fruit of Activities. And the description is of the Grihamedis in the previous verse. Lord Kapila Deva is describing the Grihamedis, those who are bound up by materialistic household life. Their Griha becomes Grihamandakupam, becomes a blind well. It's like when someone's in the forest and he's wandering about and there's a blind well with just some grass that's grown over, and he walks in and he falls down. So he's down there and he's calling out. He's yelling, help, help, but no one hears him. He's lost. So one who finds himself in a materialistic household arrangement is lost. He's in the Grihamandakupam, unless someone happens to come by and pull him out. So we're all in that state. That's where we were. We were in the Grihamandakupam. We were even lower than the Grihamandakupam, because we weren't even in, we didn't even know about the idea of becoming. It's like nowadays, the idea of even getting married is not even very important. It's not acceptable. So we were below even that level of the Grihamedis. But by the grace of Krishna, Brahmande Brahmite Kono Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi by Bhakti Lata Bij, we are calling out for help, whether we are calling out vocally or internally or Somehow or other, by Krishna's causeless mercy, he sent us a bona fide spiritual master to pull us out of the well of material existence. And therefore, we are eternally indebted, and we're very thankful. But here, the materialistic householders who worship demigods and forefathers, it says here that they're not interested in Krishna consciousness. They become simply bound up by more and more material desires, and there's no end. Therefore, sometimes the members of our Indian community, they ask us, is it really so bad to worship the demigods? You get this question a lot. Is there anything really so wrong? I'd offer some things to different demigods. Yes. Because, why are you offering those things to demigods? What is your reason? If you want pure devotion to Krishna, you don't need to approach the demigods for that. You can approach Krishna. So it means there's some other reason that you want to worship those demigods. It means you want material things. That's why people worship demigods. And that worshiping of demigods will keep one entangled, because it means I'm not giving up these material desires. They may be chanting Hare Krishna, but what is the tenth offense in chanting? To maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. Or to consider that chanting the names of the demigods is on an equal level with chanting the names of Krishna. So this is an offense. So the chanting will not be effective. So they ask, is it really so bad? Yes, because it's offensive to Krishna. It's not so bad if you don't mind staying in the material world. Do you mind staying in the material world? Birth after birth and coming back to enjoy the results of your materialistic karmic kandaya activities. If you want to get out of this material world and go back to Godhead, then you have to give up all these things. Then you can't worship demigods. You can appreciate, we can offer respects to the demigods as servants of Krishna. Prabhupada said you can give them prasadam. If you offer something to Krishna, then you can distribute the prasadam. That's how it's done at the sacrifices also. Vedic sacrifice. First they offer to Vishnu, and then the prasadam is given to the... Like even that sacrifice that Daksha was organizing, where, you know, Lord Shiva came Lord Shiva didn't pay any attention to Daksha when he arrived, and so Daksha became very angry, and he cursed Lord Shiva, and there was a whole... You know what happened. But the idea was that at those sacrifices, Vishnu is worshipped, then the prasadam is given to the different demigods. So if you see like that, as Lord Brahma explains in the Brahma Samhita, he explains very carefully how all the demigods and demigoddesses fit in. They're all under the control of Vishnu or Krishna. And that's all right. If you offer them prasadam. But if you think that they're equal and you worship them on an equal level, that's offensive to Krishna and the results will not be spiritual. So, any questions?
I often may hear that the Quran, the Old Testament and the New Testament are fourth class scriptures and that they expound the fundamental principles. When the
Vedas are recommending these things, what distinguishes them from presenting sub-religious principles? The Vedas are like a pharmacy. In a pharmacy, you have all different types of medicines for all people of all different. So, but a good pharmacy has all the medicine. So, in that sense, there's no difference when they're dealing with meat eaters, except the difference is that because the Vedic culture is so cultured, it really is, it's Krishna's system that he set up, Varnashram, Chatur Varnam Mayashastam Gunakarma Viva. He established this system of Varnashram. So to be connected with that culture, Brahminical culture, is very auspicious. It's very helpful. But, yes, we may accept the Bible and the Quran as subsidiary aspects of the Vedas, provided they're presented as they were originally propounded and not changed. It's like Srila Prabhupada was commenting that those who eat meat, either through the Vedic system by sacrifice, or even, he said, according to the Bible, there's some descriptions that you have to offer the animal, a priest, and you're not supposed to eat this kind of animal and that kind of animal. So he said, that's even better. That's better that you do that than if you just eat the animal from the slaughterhouse. He said, it's still sinful, though. So even when they do something like that, which is acceptable to their scripture, they're still sinful, but they're less sinful. So, for example, someone who goes and eats the Kali goat, he's still sinful. He's still going to have to, isn't he sinful? He's going to have to become a goat? That's a sinful reaction for his uncontrolled tongue. But he's less sinful than if he just ate the goat without offering to Kali, or without following the Vedic principles. So there's levels of sinfulness and levels of piety, and then of course within the Vedic culture you can go all the way transcendental up to the platform of Prema Kumarta Maha. And that's what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, that the ultimate goal of life is to love Krishna, to come to that point of loving Krishna. And that's a long ways from, you know, offering a goat and sacrifice to the goddess Kali to prema, Krishna prema. It's a long way. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given the quick process, the instant. This is the aid. We want everything very quick, instant. We don't want to wait. So, all right, chant Hare Krishna. That's the instant process. You can get love for Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna very easily.
Even doesn't want to merge in the impersonal Brahma. But I was wondering, is it possible to achieve Bhagavan without merging in the Brahma first? You have to do steps in Brahma, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. Or can you skip merging in the Brahma?
Yes, we can skip that.
Yeah, how do we do that?
By devotional service. Because by engaging in devotional service, you get the source of Brahma, you get the Param Brahma. Just like the example is given, that if you want to get to the 100th floor of a tall building, you don't have to walk up every step, you can take the elevator. Walking up every step means karma, okay, I walk up 20 steps, karma, kanda, then I have to go up Gyanakanda, then I have to go to the Brahmajyoti, then I have to go. But one doesn't have to do that in devotional service. There's a nice statement by Bilbamangal Thakur. He says, Mukti mukuli tanjani sevate sma dharmartha kama samaye pratiksha. So, this means that since I've been engaged in devotional service to Krishna, Bhagavan yadi syad, this beautiful, beautiful Krishna, then mukti personified, means liberation personified, she's a woman. So she's coming to me with folded hands. Mukti ukulitanjani sevatesvam. She's offering to serve me with folded hands. When someone approaches you with folded hands, that's a sign of humility. It's like, can I serve you? So she comes up with folded hands. And she's not alone. Behind her are dharma, artha, and kama. Religiosity, sense gratification, economic development. They're her maidservants. And they're standing there also with folded hands, willing to serve. So one who engages in devotional service, he's achieved everything. Everything is at his disposal. Why? Because Krishna. Because Krishna is the Lord of everything. He's the Lord of mukti. He's the Lord of kama. He's kama dev, madan mohan. Mohan is a name for kama dev or cupid. So Madan Mohan, excuse me, Madan is a name for Cupid. And Mohan means one who bewilders even Cupid, so that's Krishna. He's so attractive, he's so beautiful that even Cupid becomes under his sway. Therefore, if you engage in devotional service, there's nothing else to do. You've finished up your business. You can go back to Godhead in this lifetime. You don't have to wait and go through the Brahma Jyoti.
Someone's got a house where they have maybe where there's a few dead gods in the ocean, but also there's Krishna too, but the householders, they recognize that Krishna is supreme and he's maybe got them on a higher level and they bring some incense to him first and they go from demigods. What is that position? Well, obviously they know Krishna's supreme, but there's obviously some attachment to the demigods. They want to appease them also.
Is that ignorance? I've had long discussions trying to explain that Krishna won't be upset with you and the demigods won't be upset with you. But they don't have faith in Krishna. They're afraid that if I, just like, the example was that Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men, they were worshipping Indra. And they were very attached to doing this. They had done it every year. And little Krishna came up and said, "What are you doing, Father? What kind of sacrifice?" "We're worshipping Indra. He's Bhagavan Indra is giving us water and rain, and we're agriculture." He gave so many explanations. And Krishna, "Is this Vedic or is this?" "Well, that's customary, traditional. We've been doing this." And Krishna said, "I don't think you need to worship Indra." So this was a heavy thing because Nanda Maharaj knew that Indra, the demigods have mystic powers. They know everything that we're thinking, everything we're saying. Oh yes, it's not a joke. So he knew that, and you see that actually Indra did know everything that they were talking about. He was completely aware of it all. So they were Indra. So Nanda said, no, it's okay." And then he offered, "Well, we'll do a separate sacrifice to appease his son. We'll do a separate sacrifice as you say, Krishna." And Krishna said, no, there's no time. You better use all the paraphernalia that you were going to use for Indra's sacrifice or this other sacrifice that I'm recommending." So Nanda Maharaj did it, and look what he got. Torrents of rain and hail and the pillars of ice coming down for 7 days and seven nights, but Krishna protected him. So that's the point. Even if the demigods become upset with you, Krishna will protect you. Yes, but
I'm a very gentle person. I've got Krishna backing me up like he backed up the residents of Vrindavan. So, I just don't want to upset anybody.
Therefore, you worship everybody. Well, that's the point. But you don't upset anybody, but what about upsetting Krishna? Do you want to upset him? He doesn't want. He came and he said in Bhagavad Gita, "Kamai Saistar Hritagyana." He already came and he already said. Alright, so we'll stop there. Grantara Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.